History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, as long as some of us are willing to take a little initiative and ask a few questions, and then invest some time to patiently listen as memories from long, long ago start to take on new meaning in the here and now. The goal has always been, first and foremost, to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice. We also want to preserve their stories so the rest of us never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. As we approach the 79th anniversary of D-Day, I had planned to focus this week's episode around the invasion of Normandy, but we're going to hold off on that for another week because of the unexpected privilege I had this past week to be at a very special place that now features a very special piece of D-Day history, and in thinking about it, a landmark that really represents, in many ways, the starting point for this program. It was the long-awaited completion of the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. back in 2004, and my World War II veteran grandfather's contribution to it that first got me thinking seriously about interviewing members of that greatest generation. The memorial, constructed with $197 million of donated funds contributed mostly by World War II vets themselves, was dedicated on Memorial Day in 2004, which made this past Monday the 20th Memorial Day to be marked there. A freedom wall of 4,000 gold stars represents the more than 400,000 Americans who gave their lives for our country and our freedom in World War II. There aren't going to be too many more years where we'll have surviving World War II veterans on hand there to honor the fallen. Three of them were honored guests at this year's observance, and we're going to hear from one of those World War II vets in a moment, and then from the son of a World War II Gold Star hero. But after the national anthem, the first thing attendees heard at this year's Memorial Day commemoration in Washington was the invocation from Chaplain Will Horton.
Almighty God, we have gathered today to honor the veterans who paid the ultimate price in the preservation of the freedoms we enjoy every day. We're grateful for the World War II veterans who served with patriotism, valor, commitment, and sacrifice, and are honored at this site. Our nation's sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers answered the call in a time of crisis and laid down their lives for the love of God and country. As we read in sacred scripture, John chapter 15, verse 13, greater love has no one than this, to lay down his life for one's friends. Anchored in your holy truth, we continue to pray that we as a nation would not compromise your holy word or calling when confronted by evil forces. Refresh, merciful Father, the hearts of our citizens with the faith and the strength necessary to respond with a similar courage as the heroes we honor today. Inspire leaders of our great republic with integrity, honesty, and steadfast hearts dedicated to defending and preserving the dignity and freedom of all people. May we continue to be blessed with remarkable service members, motivated by their faith in you and their dedication to our nation. Bless this ceremony, its participants, and all who share in this memorial. Bless our military, those who are deployed this very hour, and their families. And God bless America. In your precious and holy name I pray. Amen.
Keep in mind that both the ceremony itself and the interviews conducted at the National World War II Memorial will include the sound of the memorial's centerpiece fountain flowing continuously throughout. Capturing the meaning of the World War II Memorial this Memorial Day in his welcoming remarks was the superintendent of the National Mall and Memorial Parks for the National Park Service, Jeffrey Reinbold.
It is my pleasure to welcome you to the World War II Memorial, a memorial that commemorates a generation of Americans who emerged from the Depression to fight and win the most devastating war in world history. On this Memorial Day, we gather to remember those who, in the words of Abraham Lincoln, gave the last full measure of devotion to their country. Here at the World War II Memorial, The more than 400,000 Americans lost are represented by the field of stars on the Freedom Wall behind me. Each one of the 4,048 stars symbolizes 100 individual Americans who paid the price of freedom. We also pause to remember the tens of millions of people from around the world who died in the Second World War. World War II Memorial stands not only as a tribute to the men and women who never made it home from that war, but also as a reminder of the profound impact their sacrifices had on the course of history. The memorial also pays tribute to those on the home front who supported the soldiers in this nation's war effort. The monuments and memorials that line the National Mall bring us together as Americans to remember, to learn, to inspire. They remind us of our common heritage and our responsibility to ensure those we honor are not forgotten. Among the inscriptions on this memorial are the words Admiral Chester Nimitz spoke during his address to the American people immediately following the formal surrender of Japan on September 2, 1945. Nimitz spoke of the solemn obligation that all Americans have to those who made the supreme sacrifice. He said they fought together as brothers in arms. They died together, and now they sleep side by side. To them, we have a solemn obligation. On this Memorial Day, it's important to remember that our obligation to the fallen extends well beyond the last Monday in May. The National Park Service, our volunteers, and the Friends of the World War II Memorial will be here every day of every hour of every year, watching over this place, ensuring that the sacrifices of those Americans represented in this memorial will be remembered in perpetuity.
Remembering those sacrifices in perpetuity is really what this program has always been about. And we do that primarily through the memories of World War II veterans themselves. One of three World War II Navy veterans on hand to lay wreaths at the memorial this year in Washington on Memorial Day, Dixon Hemphill has garnered great acclaim in recent years for continuing to run well into his 90s. He was the 1949 college decathlon champion for Middlebury College and once finished third in the Milrose Games in the pole vault. But those athletic accomplishments never would have come together if he had not survived World War II and a long career in the Navy, retiring with the rank of Lieutenant Commander. What did it mean to you to be here for Memorial Day, to be part of this?
Well, it meant a lot because, having served so long ago, way back in 43, 44, after that, I stayed in the reserve for 20 years, but I wasn't frankly is interested in World War II. I'd served and was doing raising a family and doing other things. But more recently, as I've gotten older, I've been really impressed by the interest in World War II. I've realized that we frankly helped save the world. It sounds a little overdoing it, but things were rough. I was telling somebody else, we were pretty much neutral until Pearl Harbor. That really woke us up. But we were pretty certain that neither the Japanese or the Germans could do much to us in this country with big oceans in between us. But Roosevelt in particular got in touch with Churchill, and poor Churchill, they were really in bad shape. They were bombed regularly with those V-2 bombs, and Hitler was about to invade Great Britain. And then we stepped in, and once we got going, we realized how serious things were. And by sending thousands and thousands of Americans over, we helped turn the tide. And we pushed Hitler back and finally made him commit suicide. And the Japanese were after us in the Pacific, and we did a wonderful job there. Finally, when Truman dropped the atomic bomb, that was the end of it. And people argue, well, we killed thousands and thousands of people when we dropped those two bombs, but what would have happened if we invaded Japan? They would have there'd been a lot of Americans killed, a lot of Americans. So it was quite a decision to make.
You said Pearl Harbor woke us up. Yeah. Do you have a personal memory of how you found out about it that day?
Oh, yeah. I was in the backyard at home in Westerly, Rhode Island, and I guess my mother called out to me and said, come on in and listen to the news. And so I did, and frankly, I knew where Pearl Harbor was, but I wasn't overexcited at the time, to be very honest, because it was so far away, and I didn't think that we would be bombed. And we were bombed, but I just didn't know what the results would be. But as the news came across, Walter Cronkite and all the reporters talking about how serious things were, and as I looked around, my high school friends were joining up, and all of us were joining up. So I joined them up, and it got going, and it turned out to be quite an adventure.
Do you have, and you know, you mentioned Pearl Harbor, the 2,400 who died there are some of those we remember on Memorial Day. Do you have people that you knew personally that you think about on this day that those gold stars there represent?
Well, I do. I don't know of anybody in particular that was at Pearl Harbor in that group, but I had friends, high school friends, who went to Europe, and one became a prisoner of war early. Very early on, and a couple guys died that I knew personally. So, and then when I went to college, I was surprised to learn that some of my classmates at college had been B-24 bombers during the war, and frogmen. Yep, one of them was a frogman, but they didn't talk about it. Didn't talk about it much. At college, people didn't talk about the war. It was over, and we were just doing other things. But it's kind of interesting how today is more interest in the war than there was earlier. Don't you agree to that?
Well, yeah. Well, back then you were all doing it, but now there's not too many of you left. So, and the history's being forgotten. And so what were you doing during the war?
Well, I was on a light cruiser, the Little Rock, and we were in the Atlantic. Our home port was Guantanamo Bay, and we sailed up and down the East Coast looking for submarines. But we didn't see any. It was near the end of the war. And so I volunteered to go to the Pacific. I wanted to do a little more, and my time wasn't up, and as soon as I volunteered, they sent me to China. So I served on the landing craft there, but I never saw action during the time I was there. I kind of wish I had, in a way, but I had an interesting career, and the smartest thing I did was to stay in the reserve. I've had a lot of medical problems, lots of them, and they've all been taken care of financially by the government, which is great.
And why was it so important for you to be here today?
Well, representing all the services, and people come up to me and say, thank you for your service. So it feels good to have been here and been in the service. Many of us didn't see combat, but we served. I like to think we helped.
So many helped in so many different ways. And through his running, Dixon Hemphill has helped direct even more attention toward his fellow veterans. I have some more information on Mr. Hemphill linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And you can also pull up some resources relating to the gentleman we're going to hear from next. Why was Ken Underwood at the National World War II Memorial on Memorial Day? To honor the father he never met. You'll hear that Gold Star family's story, which also has quite a connection to what our men and women in uniform are doing around the world right now, when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. When times get tough and budgets get tight, a lot of businesses start slashing their marketing budgets, which all too often turns into a costly mistake. Instead, what if you could customize that investment to zero in on your target audience with surgical precision? And why am I saying what if? Because I already know you can with Search Strategy Marketing. It's not about how much you spend. It's about the strategy behind it. And Search Strategy Marketing is ready to prove it to you with a free, no-obligation assessment of your current efforts. Learn how to outrank your competition with a free, customized action plan just for Hometown Heroes listeners. Just go to hometownheroesradio.com and click on that light bulb logo for Search Strategy Marketing. It doesn't matter what your business is. Search Strategy Marketing can lead you to the best way to connect with your customers. So look for that light bulb logo today at hometownheroesradio.com and plug into the power that can take your business to the next level. Let's try a little experiment here. I'm going to say a common three-word phrase, and I want you to pay attention to what kind of reaction it produces for you. You ready? Here we go. Buying a car. Okay, be honest. Did you tense up a little? If so, I don't blame you. Buying a car can be really stressful, and I've got three more words for you to make sure you do get it right. You ready? Farney Automotive Group. We recently went looking for our daughter's first car, and I made a beeline for Selma because I knew my friends at Farney Ford, Farney Buick GMC, and Toyota of Selma were people I could trust. Trust is a very important word when it comes to buying a car. And here's my advice. Regardless of what kind of vehicle you're looking for, start your search at Toyota of Selma because you can check out their wall of honor with group photos from every single Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,300 veterans who have their pictures on the wall there and also got a free oversized group photo from their trip to D.C. thanks to the generosity of the Farney Automotive Group. So new or used, big or small, start your car search today at Toyota of Selma. You can't miss it on the west side of the 99 at the Floral Avenue exit. And don't leave without visiting that wall of honor.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode recorded at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. on Memorial Day. We heard from one of the three World War II veterans who were there to lay wreaths in front of the memorial's Freedom Wall of Gold Stars, and those veterans weren't the only ones there with very personal connections to that ceremonial laying of the wreaths.
As we gather together this morning to remember the more than 400,000 Americans who lost their lives in World War II, we also remember the families that were left behind. Those families are represented here today by American World War II Orphans Network members, Colonel Robert Meek Jr., whose father, Second Lieutenant Robert Meek, was killed during a raid on the Magenta Bridge near Milan, Italy, in October 1944. And Ken Underwood, whose father, Lieutenant Kenneth Underwood, was a P-38 Lightning pilot with the 8th Air Force, 55 Fighter Group, and was killed on May 18, 1944.
My father was a P-38 Lightning fighter pilot. He was killed about 6 weeks before I was born on 18th of May, 1944. He never came home. He was buried in England at the American Cemetery there in Cambridge. They do a very wonderful memorial service there every year. The Brits still love us. And so next year I'll be taking my family, my son and daughter, over there for the 80th anniversary of their grandfather's death. We'll be there for Memorial Day next year. So he had quite a few missions. My mother got the telegram when she was 7.5 months pregnant with me. They were both 22 years old. Started holding hands in the seventh grade, you know, walking home from school. It's one of those stories. Everybody in Topeka, Kansas knew them, Ken and Alice. And so it was very, very hard on her, I'm sure.
And how old were you when you started to understand that story and the gravity of it?
Well, I don't know the exact age. I'm guessing probably six or so. My mother remarried when I was three to an Army veteran. And he had broken his neck in an air raid. So he was a farmer. He and I had the same birthday. So Mom always said that's why she married him. but he was a wonderful man. I idolized him. We were never stepfather, stepdad. We were dad and son, you know, growing up. Your question was why I'm here today. Well, I'm here because I made a presentation of a wreath for the American War Orphans Network, or AWON. Anyone listening to this broadcast who knows of a child of a World War II serviceman or woman who was killed in World War II, they should look up the American War Orphans Network. We're looking to add new people because we're getting right up there in age, too. I will be 80 next year. So that's why I'm here, and I made the presentation. I try to come every year. And I wear the P-38 Lightning shirt to honor my father. I was kidding around that I was the only person on the dais up there that didn't have a coat and tie on. I had this shirt with the P-38 Lightning. And I think that's what you noticed.
Well, and what could be a better tribute to your father? I'm curious, are there some things that by exploring this part of your background and participating in the War Orphans Network and coming to events like this and your own research, are there some things that you've learned about your father or some connections you've made that have made that time you've invested really worth it?
Oh, yes. I never knew much about my father. You know, back that generation, they didn't talk about it. My mother never talked about him. She wouldn't talk about him. And even though she was happily married to my dad, my stepdad, he wouldn't do it. So as I grew older, I always wondered, where did he die? What caused his death? All she got was a telegram saying that he was killed in an aircraft accident on 18 May 1944, letter to follow. Never received a letter. I don't believe she even received a flag. I always wondered if he had taps played for him, that type of thing. And it was through his fighter group that I became very interested. And I met men who flew with him in combat. His flight leader told me my father was a very good pilot, and they had him as his wingman on many missions. I also met his crew chief, Sergeant Maloney, who told me funny stories about him. And I was laughing and crying at the same time because I'd never heard anybody talk about my father as a pilot, as a fighter pilot. And so that was really wonderful. They said, and this might be of interest to some folks who know baseball, but they said, we need to talk to a guy named Burt Shepherd. I said, well, really? I've heard that name. They said, well, he bunked next to your father. He was shot down 3 days after your father was killed. I said, oh, well, how do I find Bert? They said, well, he hasn't been, we've had two reunions, he hasn't been to either one. We think he lives in Southern California. Now, this is 1985. I said, well, gosh, I live in Southern California. That shouldn't be any problem to find Bert. Well, you know, this is before the internet and all that, you're right? So you had to call every town and say, hi, do you have a listing for Bert Shepherd? Well, I tried that for a couple of years. I looked for him, couldn't find him. I went to an airship. And about 1987, where the Planes of Fame Museum is. Yes, I know those guys, yeah. So I was standing on the flight line watching a P-38 Lightning fly. I had never seen one. And my mother always told me there's never a sound like a P-38 Lightning. So there must have been, I don't know, 5,000 or more people standing along there. And we're standing behind a bank of television cameras there. And I just happened to look up the White Lightning, Lefty Gardner. You may have seen him at air shows. That's another story. I got to fly with Lefty quite a bit after I met him. But anyway, he was doing his thing. And I just said out of, you know, I just looking up saying, well, now I know what my mother means when she said there's no other airplane sound like a P-38. And the man next to me said, oh, you ought to hear it with the turbochargers. And I went, really? I said, well, my father flew one. We're not, you know, we're just kind of still watching the plane. He said, yeah, so did I. Well, I turned to him to introduce myself, and guess who it was? Burt Shepherd. Yeah, true story.
What are the odds?
That's my thing when I give people. Well, I talk to children a lot, you know, and I tell them, as I'm telling my story, I want you to think about what are the odds of the things I'm going to tell you now. So Bert told me, and it goes, long story short, I mean, that's a long story. I mean, I'd love to tell it, but through him, I found the tree in England that killed my father. to the day, 48 years to the day. It was 60 miles away from his base, it's east of Cambridge. And I had pictures of the crash site I got from the Air Force. Bert told me I could do that. And of course, I saw the plane scattered everywhere. There was this one tree. Now, this is back in 88, I think. One tree in that picture, the rest of them all gave away. And that's a tree that killed my father. And I told Bert, sitting at a Dodgers game, that I'm going to find that tree. Well, 4 years later, I did. The story was written in a book called USAAF Fighter Stories, 1997 edition by Ian McLaughlin. It's a fantastic story. There are a number of YouTubes about my father and me and this. Now, Bert, back to Bert, Bert Shepherd, he was shot down in Germany, and he lost his lower leg. And in the POW camp, they had to cut it off. It was all mangled. And he came back, and he pitched for the Washington Senators with a wooden leg. So if anyone's listening and comes to Washington, D.C. and goes to a Nationals baseball game, they have murals on the main floor as you walk through it of famous players that played for the Washington Senators. There's only one who has two murals, Bert Shepherd. He became a great friend and helped me along my journey. Without him, none of that would have happened. I'd still be wondering, what did it look like, where he was killed, what happened. We still don't know really what happened. He had an emergency, obviously, and had to belly land. But my son is now a captain in the United States Air Force. He is a fighter pilot. He flies the F-15E Strike Eagle. He has done things that your audience has seen on television and on the internet, trust me. I'm very proud of him. He loves it. He absolutely loves it. So on ceremonial occasions, when he has to put on his dress blues, he wears his grandfather's World War II fighter pilot ones. How cool is that?
Well, and that brings up a question that I'm not sure if you can answer or not. Do you think your son would have pursued that path if you hadn't taken the time to investigate your family's legacy and your father's ultimate sacrifice in World War II?
My immediate thought is probably not. Yeah, probably not. He had the bug as soon as he found out his father, the grandfather, was a fighter pilot. I had pictures on the wall of his room as he's growing up. I started flying when he was 8 years old. he just loved it. I put him in aerobatic planes, put him in all kinds of things, and everything that he touched, it was like he was just made to be in that cockpit. And the funny thing about it is, when we found out we were going to have a boy, the doctor said, well, his birthday is projected to be April 16th. Guess whose birthday that is? His grandfather. He was supposed to be born on his grandfather's birthday. But I tell people, he's always had a need for speed. And so he came early, March 27th, 1993. But, he's just real happy in what he's doing. People always tell me I must be proud of him. Yes, I am. But I tell people I'm more happy than proud. It's all he ever wanted to be. And I tell him, I said, you know, he majored in history at Kansas State. And I said, it's a good thing you became a fighter pilot. You'd be teaching seventh grade history in Kansas somewhere. So I think he's pretty happy. He's where he's at now. Yeah.
If you had the chance to meet this P-38 pilot you never met, your father, is there something you'd ask him? Is there something you'd want to know or something you'd want to say to him?
Oh, yeah. What happened? As a pilot, I want to know what happened. How the book came about also is that, what are the odds? There's so many of the odds in the story. It's really worth looking into. Two young boys were 13, 11 in England. They saw the P-38. Go over their head. They saw the pilot kick off the cockpit, and this man's a professor of English and left for his university in Canada. He writes like Shakespeare, and he taught how the cockpit floated through the air, hit the ground, and scattered a million pieces. they saw him go over a copse of trees, and they got on their bicycles and they, you know, bicycled over there. No pilot when they got there. For 48 years, they thought that pilot had lived. They did not know he died. So they took me to the site, and the farmer was there, and he was 16 at the time. And he took us, we walked along this path. It was an old pilgrim path, if you will. He was killed near Bury St. Edmunds. Bury's like a church. And it's all, you know, broken apart now. But back in the, way back in like 1200, something like that, people walk on this path to get there. And we're walking along, and all of a sudden, there's that tree. There's that tree. And I went, oh my God, it was 48 years the day he died. And I had pictures, and I had blown them up. And so the farmer and I walked out into a field where he said, when my father had finally stopped, I don't know what happened. I didn't want to know for sure. I knew he was killed, but I didn't know. I don't know if he was burned or whatever. And, so we're standing there, and the farmer looks down at the ground. He says, well, what is this? And he looks down, and he pulls up this twisted, riveted piece of metal. He said, this is from your father's airplane. This is none of my farm equipment. And he said, Ken, for 48 years, I've been looking for a piece of that airplane. I farm this land every year. And now you're standing or looking down at it. You know, what are the odds? Now, if you want to follow the story, and I think your listeners, if they're still listening and may blabber on, if you go to YouTube and type in 1997 Anglia, A-N-G-L-I-A, television, Underwood, you'll see the story pop up. And I won't tell the audience what happened. I want them to see, but I'll tell you later. Because it's only about a four-minute video. But if you folks have listened to this, what are the odds? I didn't even begin to tell you all what are the odds that led me to that tree.
Well, we're going to hear more about that journey of discovery when we come back. You can follow Ken Underwood's advice and pull up those videos connected to his family's Gold Star story online. I've also made it easy for you at hometownheroesradio.com, where you can find a link as well to the Stories Behind the Stars project. That's the effort to tell the story of every single American who was killed while serving in World War II, with a deadline a little more than 2 years away. The goal is to have all of those done, more than 400,000, by the time we mark the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II in 2025. It's a grassroots effort involving volunteers all over the country. You can go to storiesbehindthestars.org or pull up that link at hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a little different twist this week. And thanks to that fountain at the National World War II Memorial, maybe a little different sound as well. You know, for the better part of two decades now, I've had the privilege of announcing the Scripps National Spelling Bee on television. It's always an inspiring peek into our nation's future as some of the best and brightest minds put their incredible brain power on display. And juxtaposed against the memorials in Washington in the wake of Memorial Day, it's always a reminder to me of the promise, the prospects, the freedom, and the kind of future so many courageous and selfless Americans have given their lives to provide. The Spelling Bee happens to be the longest-running educational competition in the country. The first champion was Louisville, Kentucky's Frank Neuhauser, who would go on to serve in the Navy in World War II. Until the pandemic of 2020, World War II was the only thing that had ever caused the National Spelling Bee to be canceled. But since it's held in the Washington, D.C. area, it gave me the chance this year to make it in time for Memorial Day ceremonies at the National World War II Memorial. And that's where I had the privilege of meeting Ken Underwood, whose father, a P-38 pilot, was killed in England just 6 weeks before Ken was born.
So when my mother received the telegram from the Army Air Corps, she and her sister were sitting on their porch swing at their parents' house. My mother had moved in with her parents while my father was over in Europe. And the Army car pulled up but went to the next house up, the Millers. My aunt said, well, why would they pull up there? The Millers don't have anybody in the service. My mother said, they're looking for me. And my aunt said, what makes you think that? She said, because last night I had a dream where the heavens opened up and Ken was looking down at me smiling. And sure enough, the man came over, handed her the telegram. The telegram said, sorry to let you know your husband was killed in a flying accident, airplane accident. My mother couldn't understand that. An airplane accident? He's a fighter pilot. What do you mean? And so that started our life, I guess, as me being a war orphan. That's how I got the name. I wasn't truly a war orphan. I wasn't an orphan. I had a mother. But the idea was that our father left us, was killed. So that's in the book also. And there's one other thing. The folks who put this on here today, the Friends of the World War II Memorial, if you go to their website, Friends of World War II Memorial, and they have Vimeo, yeah. They asked me, I think it was 2 years ago, to do a Vimeo about my story. And I said, sure. So they sent a videographer out to my house, and he said, now, Ken, we cut these off at 30 minutes. That's all everybody ever gets to do, so, you know, we'll kind of be watching that. So I'm telling the story, and he said, Ken, we're at 30 minutes. He says, my God, this is a hell of a story. Keep talking. So it went for 42 minutes. And if they look in there and look for, I don't know how, I mean, somebody at the Friends of the World War II Memorial could direct them. It was in July of 2021, I believe, 2 years ago. And I have to tell you, my daughter was married on April 16th, 2021 in Austin. And, of course, that was her grandfather's 100th birthday. And I said, honey, did you pick that date because of your grandfather? She said, no, Dad, but something just kept telling me I should pick that date. I said, honey, it wasn't something. It was somebody. Yeah, it was him. I know that for sure. How else do you explain? And that's why I say all these, what are the odds? I mean, you've heard about a tenth of them in this story. It was quite amazing. But that Vimeo, if you look it up, if you had nothing else to do, pour yourself a big glass of wine, folks. Well, it's 42 minutes long, but I think you'll find it interesting. Your initial question was, what would I ask him? I'd say, so what happened? His flight leader told me, he said, Ken, your dad was a really good pilot. Had him on, you know, as a wingman on many missions. He said, but, you know, they'd escort the bombers over to Berlin and back and things like that, and they dropped down on the way back to England and shoot up locomotives and airfields, anything they could find, targets of opportunity. So on his, when they would dive down, in fact, his 55th Fighter Group was called the Loco Busters. Locomotives, Loco Busters. And he said, "Your dad just get down too low and straight out." He said he didn't leave him any room to himself to maneuver. And the Germans were getting smart. When they'd see any type of fighter come in and strafe them, they were putting anti-aircraft guns in their freight cars. And they'd open up the door and, you know, they'd shoot at the pilot. So he told him, "I want you to work on your angle of attack on the locomotives." So guess what he was doing when something went wrong? We found that out because a Mr. Wakefield was the station agent up there, 60 miles north of where my father was based. That's where he was doing this, near Cambridge. And he said, "Yeah, that plane was buttoning the field, you know, the railroad yard quite a bit." And so something went wrong, see? And he was down low, too low to bail out. What happened? What happened? That's all. That's all I want to know. I have gotten to know my father better. He was a great guy, a very handsome man. My mother was beautiful. They were, everybody in Topeka, Kansas knew Ken and Alice, you know. And, yeah, I'd like to meet him. I'd like to ask him that question. Yeah. Of course, there's other questions I want to ask, too, but you asked me the primary one. That's it. Yeah, what happened?
Yeah. And with everything you've learned about him and what he did as a fighter pilot, is there a part of that that you imagine yourself being in his shoes and maybe it blows your mind a little bit or it just puts you in awe?
No, I always wanted to be a fighter pilot, like my father. In fact, when I grew up, I still want to be one. And I think that permeated down through me to my son. I'm so happy my son got to do it. Yeah, that's all I wanted to be, too. And it didn't work out. I did a lot of flying, you know, private flying. I used to fly with a guy named Bill Lear, Learjet.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I flew a Bill, and I can tell you that the Learjet will do aerobatic.
You said earlier you encouraged people that might have been war orphans to sign up for the network. What about people who they have a loved one? Maybe it's not a parent. Maybe it's an uncle or a grandparent, or there's someone in their family who is a Gold Star hero that they don't know that much about, and maybe they don't even know where to start. What advice or encouragement would you have for them?
I would say contact the American War Orphans Network. We're on the Internet. It's like everything else these days. Send in an inquiry. We'll help you find them. We can tell you where to look for records. I'm a senior member of the Civil Air Patrol in Calvert County, and I helped a young man find all the records about his grandfather. That he died, and those records went away, and he didn't know how to go about it. His dad didn't know how to go about it, and I helped him. And it meant so much to him. So yes, please have us contact us, and we'll help you. There's another video that you might want to see. It was done by the American Battlefields Memorial Commission, and again, it's only about 3 or 4 minutes, but it features me and my son. When my son was a sophomore at Kansas State, he was still in Air Force ROTC. And in it, you'll hear this kid say how much he wants to be a fighter pilot like his grandfather and fly, you wearing the same uniform and flying the same aircraft. In other words, Air Force and the Lightning II. The F-35 Lightning II is named after the P-38 Lightning. And I told him, I said, "Son, you're going to end up in that F-35 before you know it." He's only 29, and he's already a captain. He turned 30, I'm sorry, in March. He thinks he might make major this year. He has done things that your folks have seen on the Internet, and I can't tell you on this. But
we're standing in front of 4,000 gold stars, and it says, "Here we mark the price of freedom." What do you think about when you come here and you see those stars?
That's what I think about. Yeah, those stars mean we are here. We're here. We're a free country. They gave their lives for that. I look at those stars and I think of him being on one of those stars. You know, he was only 22 years old. He never got to be a father. He didn't know if he had a boy or a girl. You know, I came along 6 weeks after he was born. One of the men who flew with him said, "Yeah, we cleaned out your dad's locker and sent everything in it back to your mother, except a bottle of hooch that he had been saving to celebrate your birth." And he said, "When we got word that you were born, we opened the bottle and passed the bottle of hooch around the squadron. it's things like that that I learned about also. You know, I never, like I said, I got to know him a little bit as a fighter pilot. And things. I would say if you go, there's a website called MeWe. One of our members of the American War Orphans Network posts every day on this day, on this year. Let's say it's what, May 29th, is it? May 29th, 1941, he lists all the men who are membership were killed that day. Then May 29th, 1942, 43, 44, 45. And I think the one thing that gets me really feeling bad is when I see a young man who was killed in April or May of 45. And the war was over in Europe in May. Yeah, same thing in the Pacific, you know. Seeing somebody being killed in July of 1945, and we dropped the bomb in August of 45. Oh, that just gets to me, you know. Yeah. So none of those men got to grow up. They didn't get to be, well, some of them were fathers. Some of them knew they were really young kids, very young. But the majority of the boys killed in World War II never got to be a father. I think that hurts.
One last question, if you have anything to add, feel free. Has becoming aware of this, of having all this information, of knowing what your father did and what so many others did, has that affected the way you've lived your life and the priorities that you maintain?
I'd say so, yeah. I'm a pretty straight shooter, old school. My son is too. My daughter is. And I appreciated every day that he gave his life. Even when I was a little kid, I had a picture of Daddy Ken and Daddy Ernie, you know, on my dresser, right next to each other. And my stepdad and my dad, he was never my stepdad, he was my dad. My mom married when I was just turned three. He wanted to adopt me. And they let me make that decision. I must have been only 11 or 12 years old, I don't know. And I laid awake at night and cried. I didn't know what to do. I loved him so much. But I wanted to honor my father. I was named after him. And so I made that choice, and I kept my father's name. And my son now has the same name. So when I took him when he was in high school, I took him to England to see his grandfather's grave and cross. And you see his name on there, too. Yeah. And about my son, if you, on that YouTube, I don't think I told you what it was, it's done by the American Battlefields Commission. Mm-hmm. It's called Lieutenant, LT period, Kenneth H. Underwood, Never Forgotten. And for those of you who have young boys or girls who might think they'd like to be a fighter pilot or a pilot or anything like that, have a look at it. You'll see a 20-year-old kid say, hey, that's what I want to do. And now he is a highly decorated combat pilot. And I want to thank you for asking me to speak to you. I hope maybe it'll spread some news out there, and we'll have some folks get in touch with us.
If you go to hometownheroesradio.com, you'll find links to the American War Orphans Network, to the videos Ken Underwood referenced, and to the nonprofit Friends of the World War II Memorial, which takes such incredible care of the Greatest Generation's legacy there on the National Mall in Washington. Thanks so much for taking this journey with us today on Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that on Memorial Day and every day, freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.
If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses going to your heart, you just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.